Pittsburgh's rock and alternative. WXDX FM, Pittsburgh.
Charles Dickens should have covered that game on Saturday. It was the best of games. It was the worst of games. That second period was the worst hockey the Penguins have played all year. That could have lost the whole series if you end up losing that game. The Penguins had their head all the way up their ass. No defense, no offense, no nothing. But after Heinen scored midway through the third period to make it 5-4 Penguins, the Penguins managed the last 9 minutes of that game perfectly. They worked the puck down low. I just talked about that one shift behind the net by Sid. That was double live Gonzo. That popped the crowd big time. And the Penguins clogged the neutral zone. I think the Penguins even trapped. I'm not sure because you never see those uniforms do that. It's tough to figure out. But for the first time in a long time, the Penguins managed score and situation. It was smart hockey. It was playoff hockey. Rinse and repeat, because you're going to need to do that again. No ego, settle for winning any which way you can, even if it's not on your terms. Especially if it's not on your terms. New World Order brought to you by 84 Lumber, your hometown building partner, and by Armstrong, keeping you connected. First goal's going to mean a ton tonight. That's cliched to say, but cliches are true, and it applies even more because I just don't think the Penguins are going to come from behind against the Rangers very often. They kept coming from behind the first game, didn't make any inroads in that regard in the second game. Blew a 4-1 lead in the third game, but luckily never had to come from behind because I don't think that's going to be something that's easy for them to do in this series. Unless Shesterkin keeps dripping brown into the blue paint like he did on Saturday night. Let's go to Matt. Matt, you're on the Mark Madden Show.
King.
What up, Matt?
Hey, Mark. Hey. You know, I hadn't seen Domingue play in the past, but watching him in these last games, you can see why he's never really made it big. He's really good on – well, he's okay on the first shot, but after that, he just flounders. He's all over the place.
I agree, and I think I can tell you why that is. Louis Domingue is weak at moving side to side, so he overcommits on the first shot to get to the far post, and as a result, he goes so hard and goes so soon, and maybe goes a little too far, he has to scramble after that. That's what I'm seeing anyway. And there was an instance in the third period, and it was midway through, I forget if it was before or after the Penguins scored, where Artemi Panarin of the Rangers, who was quite the crafty player, he held onto the puck for just a tick when he got it and waited for Domingue to overcommit. And then he shot it back the way Domingue came, but luckily for the Penguins, he shot it wide.
Right. Thank God for the D. They seem to know, and they seem to try to clean it up after that first shot.
I don't know that the D played that great, brah. I think thank God for having scored 7 goals. Let's go to Dan. Dan, you're on the Mark Madden Show.
Hey, Mark, you kind of touched on this in your little monologue in this segment, but, you know, I think the Penguins have done a really good job of keeping most of the series 5-on-5 because I think the Rangers are a bottom third team when it comes to 5-on-5 play. And the Penguins are getting good chances 5-on-5, and they're exposing Shesterkin for some of his weaknesses. So, this series is as close as it gets. But as long as they can keep it 5-on-5 and not get carried away with the penalties, I think they might be in good shape.
Well, you bring a good point up about not getting carried away with the penalties because the Penguins were really lucky with special teams on Saturday. They scored on 2 out of 3 power plays, but it was the second unit that got both those goals. And Letang coughed up a shorty when the Penguins had the man advantage. And the Penguins killed 3 penalties, which is great against that power play, which is very, very good. But if I'm not mistaken, the Penguins took all 3 penalties in the offensive zone. I know both of Heinen's penalties were in the offensive zone.
Yeah, and again, I think if you can keep him at three or less, because once you start getting into four or more, now you've got your line combinations messed up. And again, the Rangers are not a good team 5-on-5. I think without Shesterkin, you play 5-on-5, the Rangers are not a playoff team. So keep it at 5-on-5.
Then again, Matt, let's look at the regular season games, because the Penguins got dominated by the Rangers 5-on-5.
I think the schedule had a little bit to do with that, too. That second game, three games in four nights.
Oh, yeah, the one game at the Garden, yeah, you could throw that up. But what about the other three games?
Yeah.
Even the games, even the one game the Penguins won in the regular season, the 1-0 victory, Jari kind of stole. But yeah, no, you bring up good points about them 5-on-5, and I think one thing the Penguins have really shown a lot by doing is they only average 25 shots a game in the four regular season meetings, but they've got a lot of pucks on net so far in these playoffs, and they obviously need to keep doing that. Let's go to Dan. Dan, you're on the Mark Madden Show. Okay, we lost Dan. Okay, 412-333-WXDX is the number to call. That second period, that's the nuttiest period of hockey I've seen the Penguins play. Like I said, this is the weirdest series going all the way back to Philadelphia in 2012. Let's just hope Domingue plays a little better. I get people refusing to acknowledge that 9 goals in 2 games is too many, and that an 88.1 save percentage isn't good enough. Louis Domingue battles. I give him that. He's in a tough situation. I readily acknowledge that. He's got to allow less goals. For the Penguins to win this series, it would be better if he averaged less than 4.5 goals per game against. Of course, I'm not adding in the however many minutes it was he played in the overtime when he stopped 17 shots and didn't allow a goal, and obviously that was very crucial. I bet the Rangers are still kicking themselves about how they lost that game, and I guarantee we'll kick themselves, and that will be often cited if they wound up losing this series. I'm getting a lot of hate because I'm not crowning Domingue as this great Penguin folk hero. You know how he can become a great Penguin folk hero? Win the series. Otherwise, none of this matters. And I mean that very sincerely. If he doesn't win the series, none of this matters at all. And if he wants to increase his job prospects moving forward, whether it's in Pittsburgh or anywhere else, he needs to win the series. Because if the Penguins don't win this series, and Louis Domingue's numbers aren't very good at series end, as I suspect they won't be, then he's not the folk hero. He's the excuse. Well, what you expect? The Penguins had that third string bum in there. There's a long way to go for Louis Domingue. Let's go to Kevin. You're on the Mark Madden Show.
Hey, afternoon, Super G. Hey,
afternoon.
Just to go off that last caller with the 5-on-5. When we played them during the regular season, I think we only averaged like maybe 20, 25 shots on goal. And this time we're putting the puck, 30-plus on them. I think that's shown a little bit of dividend. What do you think?
No question. They only averaged 25 shots and change in the regular season, to be exact. And I give the Penguins a lot of credit in another regard, too, besides the shots. They are skating right with the Rangers. They were clearly slower than the Rangers in the regular season, but whether it's playoff adrenaline, I mean, who knows why. And why ask why, but they're just as fast as the Rangers are so far in this series, and I hope they can continue that because it's crucial. It defines the Penguins' style.
All right,
let's go to Rick. Rick, you're on the Mark Madden Show.
Hey, Mark. I just think in the past two games, it looks like Malkin's playing a little bit more of a 200-foot game, maybe a little bit more on the forecheck. I just, I don't know how much more you're going to get out of him. What do you think about that? I don't know.
I think if Evgeny Malkin doesn't get points, he's not helping.
I
really haven't noticed him playing this great 200-foot game. I have a hunch if he were, I would notice. But he's doing, okay, I guess. He's not killing them. He's not making a bunch of mistakes between the blue lines, although he took what I thought was a dumb penalty Saturday. But don't you need more? I mean, can we really, would you bring him back if this is the best he can do in the playoffs?
No, I definitely wouldn't bring him back. No, I mean, the price really would have to be right, would have to be better than right. What say you?
He wants $7 million a year. Would you give him that?
I wouldn't give him 7. I'd give him 5.
maybe. Thank you for the call. 412-333-WXDX number to call. Let's get some calls in. The next call, the next segment would be a good segment for calls because we got Phil Bork, the old 2-9er, at the bottom of the hour here on 105.9 The X.
And now the super genius, Mark Madden.
This is Bob Hope.
Hi, this is. How you doing?
You know what? Why?
Call back when you're coherent.
The X at 105.9.
I'm not sure if there's any tickets available for tonight. Try PittsburghPenguins.com/playoffs or call 412-642-PENS. I would hope it's sold out. They're giving you max effort. They're up 2-1. I would hope that the crowd's as noisy as it was on Saturday for Game 3. Don't forget, you can watch home games on the FNB big screen. That's located on the corner of Center Avenue and Logan Street, directly across from PPG Paints Arena. And you can also watch the game at the Coors Light Igloo Club on 5th, the old TGI Fridays, which is open for all Penguins home games. By the way, I think that Coors Light Igloo Club is just a fantastic idea, and I hope it does well enough to stay open beyond these playoffs. 412-333-WXDX. The fans were chanting, Igor, Igor. I'm not sure that would bother me if I were, you know, the goalie. In fact, I think I'd like to have my name chanted, but that's a Pittsburgh tradition for the chant to be as boring and sterile as possible. You should try chanting Igor. Igor, Igor. You know, like young Frankenstein. Rather, Frankenstein. Let's go to Natalie. Natalie, you're on the Mark Madden Show.
Hi, Mark.
Hi, Natalie.
Hi. So I was wondering what you think of Igor Shesterkin's play so far this series after the dominating, like, regular season he had.
Well, here, let me compare both goalies from Saturday. Horiev, it was hard to tell because he faced minimal pressure in the second period. I thought that he should have stopped the Dunton-Heinen shot, the one that won the game, but thank heaven he didn't. I thought Shesterkin had trouble finding the puck. I like, you look at the four goals he allowed, on three of them, he just couldn't find the puck. It got loose kind of under his feet, and the Penguins managed to put it in net. Now, for Domingue, I thought Domingue was battling the puck. He was, like, stabbing and reaching. So I don't think that Saturday was a goaltending festival by any means, but you would certainly expect more and better from Shesterkin being the presumptive Vezina Trophy winner. But that's what I think, Natalie. You tell me. I don't think he could find the puck. I thought it got caught up in his feet a couple times.
As someone who, he was on my fantasy team this year, so I've been pretty impressed with him throughout the regular season. I kind of expected a bit more from him. I don't know if it's maybe inexperience in the playoffs or if the Pens have figured him out, but I'm not complaining about it so far.
Oh, no, I don't think they figured him out at all. I think he played great in the first game, including all those overtimes. I think that he didn't have much to do in the second game. I'll tell you what I would do tonight, though, Natalie. Just based on what happened in game one, I would try to stick the puck in his feet. I would do like what McGinn did on the first goal. I'd just try to jam it near the post and see if it can repeat from Saturday.
Yeah, I've got to agree with you on that.
Thank you for the call, Natalie. Let's go now. This should be great. He is the legend. Legend, what up, what up?
Better looking than 10 movie stars, double M, what up?
You know it, man.
Intriguing minds would like to know, since Casey DeSmith went down and Zari went down, I'm wondering if there's a rule in the NHL, like an emergency rule, where you can make a trade with another team.
Oh, no. You can't make a trade. You have to call guys up from your system, like, you know, with getting Alex Diorio, who's the backup now, who started the season with Wheeling, if I'm not mistaken. But every rink has an emergency backup goalie, the E-Bug. It's usually some local yokel type of guy. And you may recall a few years ago, the emergency backup goalie in Toronto dressed for Carolina, and he beat the Maple Leafs.
I don't know if you knew this or not, Mark, but one of the colleagues of the Hall of Famers, Bill DeFabio, is real sick right now. So,
oh, I did not know that. Well, pass along my get-well wishes to him if you could. Legend, thank you for calling. As always, it's great to hear from you. Let's go to Buck, you're on with the Super Genius.
Hey, Mark. The way the Pens played the last 8 minutes on Saturday was a bit reminiscent of how they finished games in 16 and 17, and whether or not it was or wasn't a true trap. How do they implement that more widespread?
Well, it was a trap. It was a trap, first off. Any team could do it. You learn how to trap when you're 8 years old in hockey. It's just you have to want to do it. And you have to realize the value of doing it, which I don't think they almost ever do, except thank God for those last 9 minutes on Saturday.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I thought if they used it after they score a goal or first 2 minutes, 5 minutes in a period, that might mitigate some of those.
Well, and what they also did that was just as important, Buck, was they worked the puck down low. Look at that shift Sid had behind the net. They weren't always trying to run and gun and attack on the rush and be one and done on possessions. They were keeping the puck down low and making the Rangers work to get it, then come a long way with it.
Yep. Yeah, and I mean, that shift was just vintage Sid. And I thought they still were able to produce some chances even doing that.
Thank you for the call, Buck. Up next, going to talk to Phil Bourque, the old 2-9er. I am live at Cambria Hotel, right above PPG Paints Arena. Game 4 tonight, Penguins and Rangers. Hear all the action right here on 105.9 The X. Penguins and Rangers tonight, Game 4. It's pivotal at PPG Paints Arena. Joining me now to discuss, usually he's doing color analysis on broadcast right here on The X, but he'll have tonight off due to being in the COVID vortex. He is the two-time Stanley Cup champion, the old 2-9er, Phil Bourque. Bourque, how pivotal is tonight's game? If Pittsburgh wins, I feel like they can bleed out the series.
Well, good afternoon, Mr. Madden. Good to be on your show. I'm going to respectfully disagree with you. I maybe if you could reword that or use a different terminology than bleed out the series. I think you really got to just keep it in the context of, you know, shift by shift, period, game by game. And as long as you do that, not think of, oh, if we go up here, oh, we're up 3-1, oh, this and oh, that. Everything seems to take care of itself. I've just learned over, you know, my years of playing, I've had the good and I've had the bad, Mark. And the bad has happened when I've kind of peaked ahead. If the Penguins can come out and play as physical as they did in game number 3, as well as, you know, get that first goal, get to Shesterkin early, and establish their forecheck and really dictate the terms, there's no reason why they can't win this game and hopefully win the series. And also, if Louis Domingue can just make the saves he's supposed to make and give the team a chance, there's still a lot of guys that need to step up. It was great to see Erod the other night, but I think you'll agree there's a lot of guys that still need to step up offensively and start chipping in on a little bit more consistent basis.
Now, you brought up a real good point about how the Penguins were physical, more physical in Game 3 than they've been quite some time, and that goes back into the regular season. What was the catalyst for that? Because Jason Zucker had 7 hits. That was the most in the game. And, boy, he's an unlikely source for play like that, but I thought it brought a lot to the table.
Yeah, he was the guy. You took the name right out of my mouth. But, you know, and we've seen this from Jason Zucker before. Last year, he was a force. And when he gets a fire in his belly, he doesn't look like the biggest guy out there. But, Mark, he's got a really strong lower half. He's got a rump the size of Rhode Island, you know. And when he dips his knees down and drops his shoulder, he pops guys. And, you know, he pops the right guys. You know, he doesn't really check the number a lot of times. But I think he did check the number the one time in the corner and saw 23 in white. And Adam Fox, if there's one defenseman that you want to put a bullseye on, it's a guy that won the Norris Trophy last year and is a guy that can really push the offense. So Jason Zucker is, wow, when he's healthy and he can play that style, very, very effective for the Pens.
I think this is one of the crazier series we've seen in quite some time. It dates back to Philadelphia in 2012 for me. Let's look at that second period Saturday. How did the Penguins lose control of that game? I know 40 minutes is a long time, but I also know 4-1 is a big lead.
Yeah, that's the thing. It only takes one a lot of times. One little mistake, one little gaff, one little let the foot off the gas pedal, and that's you know, part of why playoff hockey is so great, part of why this is the greatest team sport that's out there. And there was just, I'll tell you, take a couple guys thinking, oh, we got this baby in the bag. And just quickly, just a quick side story of personally for me, if you remember, we were leading 8-0 late in the game number 6 against Minnesota. It wasn't until 2 minutes left in the game that I felt like, oh, okay, this one's in the bag. You have to learn that lesson the hard way. Hopefully you can learn it and still win the game and be better for it throughout the playoffs. Hopefully guys throughout this hockey club have realized, wow, these playoffs are for real. It's a learning process. No matter how smart you think you are, no matter how long you've been in the league, you let your foot off the gas pedal, just one bad turnover, one bad cross-ice pass, one missed check, one little thing like that, it can turn the whole game around. And so that you have to have that mentality. That's why it's so important to be just on point. As hard as these playoffs are, Mark, physically, I think they're harder mentally and emotionally to stay on point the whole time.
Well, I think the Penguins did take the lesson learned from the second period to the last 9 minutes of the game, because after Heinen scored, the Penguins played very smart. They played down low. Borky, you can confirm or deny, but I think I even saw some trapping going on.
Yeah, a little bit, but smart, right? Still moving your feet, still staying aggressive. Any turnovers in a smart way, attack, attack, attack. And I really felt, you make a great point, I really felt that that whole charge was led by the captain. I think Sid kind of took the bull by the horns. And you can maybe throw his whole line in there too, but I thought it was really Sid. Hanging on to pucks, had the wide base, one hand on the stick, and he was just grinding and grinding down low. And I thought that really taxed the New York Rangers, where they felt like any momentum they grabbed in the second, that slowly got tilted down in their end, mostly led by the forecheck and the cycle and all the down-low work by the captain.
We're talking to Phil Bourque, the old 2-9er. Penguins and Rangers, game 4 tonight at PPG Paints Arena. What are your expectations for Shesterkin tonight? He really imploded Saturday. He got the puck lost under his feet a few times and seemed to have trouble finding it.
I don't know what to expect. I think if I'm in that locker room getting ready to go out, I'm getting in his grill. He's an emotional guy, which can work for you if you're seasoned and you've been through a lot of ups and downs, and you know, you can harness those emotions. But he seems to have a lot of ups and downs. You remember the last regular season game in Pittsburgh? In New York, you know, he was the guy that was the emotional really leader for the team, which you don't see from a goaltender very much. But, Mark, again, I see cracks in his armor. I see flaws in his game. He's a goaltender that has incredible flexibility, that is able to unhinge his hips in the butterfly position. He never gives up on pucks. He loves to put the left glove on top of the left pad when he does his unhinging on the butterfly. So you've got to get it upstairs on. I think you can beat him upstairs. And also the old pass off the pad, I think it's there because he when he goes down into that position, he's locked in there, Mark. And if you put the pass off the pad, he kicked a lot of pucks out into the slot area. Now, a lot of times the Penguins haven't been there to get those pucks, but I think if they adjust their game a little bit, they can find some more offense that way.
What do you expect from Domingue tonight? He won on Saturday, but 4 goals is a lot of goals. How would you rate his play, Borky? I know he's a great story.
Yeah, he is a great story. I mean, you can't get away from that. We're lucky to have him. There's not too many goalies in teams in this league that have a third-string goalie of the caliber of Louis Domingue. Because, again, he battles his butt off. For the most part, he's technically sound. For the most part, when it's not about technique and it's just about will and getting big, example, the save he made on Panarin in that third period, you know, there's no technique there. That's just getting your shoulders up and looking as big as you can and finding a way to keep the biscuit out of the net. So those are the things. Those are just little intangible things that I love about him. And he's not that far removed from a guy that we had in Frankie Pietrangelo. You know, you knew he's not a great goalie. Let's not get carried away here. But when you've got a guy that skills are good, technique is good, but his heart is huge, man, don't you want to just battle even harder for him? Not that you don't want to battle in the playoffs, right? But there's something about that guy, his swagger, his confidence, not just happy to be here, but wanting to be a difference maker. I think that permeates throughout the team.
Would you pair Letang with Matheson with Dumoulin still out? What are the pros and cons there? Because I thought they played better in the third during that period while Sully split them up as a pair.
Oh, boy. If you're asking me, I don't do it. And I hate to second guess Sully or Todd Ridden because I know they have reasons why they're doing it that we don't know about. And you're right. They were better. Obviously, the Penguins win the game. And Mike Matheson, you know, jumping up on the play, he can be a difference maker when he does it at the right time. They must see something. They must know something. The conversations I'm sure they've had with each player on how comfortable they are and they feel like they can get better. Personally, I like Matheson with Ruedel. I think that's more of a yin and a yang. And you know what? I actually wouldn't be that, you know, scared to put Marcus Pedersen up there and try him with Chris Letang. Because John Marino seems to – you agree with that?
Yep.
Yeah. I might take a sniff at that. But, again, I'd want to have that conversation with each player individually to see how comfortable they would feel about it.
Here's a funny one. The number two power play scored twice on Saturday. The number one power play coughed up a shorthanded goal. Would you make the number two power play, the number one power play, maybe the first couple times tonight?
No. No, I wouldn't. And I understand why you say that because they keep it simple, right? And they have a shoot-first mentality, and they're not trying high-risk plays. And there's more of an urgency. They're hungrier than the number one unit right now. It pains me to say that, but that's what I'm witnessing. It's a fine line between being urgent and being relaxed, you know? And sometimes you can err on the side of relaxed more than urgent. And again, it's all about, it seems like it's a broken record. Because I don't care if you're talking about Colorado, if you're talking about Washington, you're talking about Pittsburgh or Florida, it doesn't matter. When the power play doesn't go right, the first things the players and the coaches say, we got to keep it simple. We got to keep it simple. But then they go out there and they try things that are just ridiculously difficult. So if they can get back to simplifying things, maybe not passing more than two times and then getting it to the net, because it's not always the shot that goes in. You know this, Mark. More times than not, I bet you probably 75% of the power play goals scored in the league are off the second and third opportunity. But the first opportunity is a hard shot on goal. Those are the toughest ones for penalty-killing units to defend, is what happens after the initial shot.
Finally, Borky, the bottom six got the first four goals on Saturday. Can they keep it up? And I got to tell you, Erod can get real cold. He can get real hot, too. He scored seven goals during that 10-game winning streak. I'm hoping for the best for number nine.
I agree because, and you know what? He's rewarding his coach because Mike Sullivan is stuck by him come hell or high water. And that's, I tell you what, that's an endorsement that not a lot of players in this league get. And so I think he appreciates it. His work ethic has never been questioned. But when you get on that kind of heater, we don't expect it to drop off the way it did. So, yeah, man, when you get hot like that, the stick just feels good. The curve looks good. The tape on the curve looks good. And you just want to rip everything and make sure you hit the net. Because with Shesterkin, especially the way things went last game, the worst thing you can do is miss the net, especially early on. Really pound things. And don't be afraid to put one up by his earlobe. You'll waste one by his earlobe if you're going to waste one from a bad angle. Because you never know where his nerves are right now. But for a guy like Erod and a guy like Brock McGinn, those kind of guys, you're right, they are streaky scorers, and you hopefully by them getting one or like Erod getting a couple, and let's throw Jeff Carter in there too. Your original question was, can it continue? My only answer is it has to continue. If you want to win this series and you want to move on and get out of the first round, you've got to continue to get goal scoring, from guys in the bottom six, if not the bottom nine.
Borky, thank you for taking the time. May you feel well, get out of that protocol, and enjoy tonight's game.
All right. Double M, I enjoyed our time together, and this was Good Hockey Talk.
That's the old 2-9er, Phil Bork. He's brought to us by the Center for Hair Restoration, by Armstrong, and America Runs on Duncan. I love Duncan. By the way, earlier I skipped No Quarter, brought to us by CWElectricalServices.com. Woody from the Woody Show is in the house. He's going to join us closer to the top of the hour. Right now, I want your calls. I want your calls right now at 412-333-WXDX. How pivotal is tonight's game? And here's a question maybe we have to think about. Tristan Jarry took shots today. When he's ready, would you put him right back in there, or would you stick with Domingue? Would you go with Jarry, or would you go with Duck? I mean, Domingue. 105.9X.
Madden.
Bubba M. Huge fan, buddy. Your voice is like sweet nectar to my ears.
Still of the night, still of the night, still of the night.
The X at 105.9.
We got Woody from the Wooding Show here in the morning at the top of the hour, right after the list. If you want to know how I think tonight's game is going to go, well, you might not like it. Then again, you might. I think this game goes one of two ways. I think Pittsburgh gets up early and ekes out a low-scoring win, which wouldn't make sense because that would require Domingue outdoing Shesterkin. Or I think New York scores four in the first period and winds up winning 7-0. I think it'll be one or the other. And I say that because this series is, Josh Owey pointed out on Twitter, and as I've said repeatedly since, this is the weirdest series since Pittsburgh and Philadelphia in 2012. If you know which way it's going to go, tell me so we can both get a bet down. But, I mean, the first game, triple overtime, Domingue comes in cold. The second game was the closest thing to, like, a hockey game. Penguins didn't get a sniff, but it was a relatively normal game to watch. Then Saturday, game three, Penguins up 4-1, play their worst period of the year, tied 4-4. They get a 5-4 lead with 9 minutes left, and then they trap and work down low. That team, which is so adamantly against doing anything but playing wide open, speed, ego, skill, we do it our way or we lose. They finally swallowed their pride a little bit, said we would rather do it another way and win, and they did what Mark Madden told them to. If they did what Mark Madden told them to all the time, they'd be an even better team than they are. Trap and counterattack, boys. Use your speed selectively. That's the way to go. We want your calls, 412-333-WXDX. We got Dan Rosen, the senior writer for NHL.com at 5:30. Right now, let's go to Eric. Eric, you're on with Double M.
Hey, Super Genius. Answering your question, I think if Jarry does return to full health, I think you have to play him. I don't think you trust Domingue. I love the story, as a lot of people have said. I just don't think he's a good goalie. Is it a legit gripe, though? I've heard some people say, do you put Jarry in cold like that after having not played for a while? Is that a legit concern?
Okay, when do you put him in then?
Well, that's what I mean. I think you do.
I mean, at some point, he's cold going in. Even if it's next year. Like, let me ask you a question. Let me narrow down the debate.
Sure.
What if Domingue gets you to Game 7 and Jari's ready?
I still think you go with Jarry. I just don't trust Domingue, as great as the story's been.
Okay, so do I. So do I. So do I, Eric. I would go with Jarry. What will Sullivan do?
I think he would go with Jarry. Wouldn't you think so?
I guarantee 100% he'd go with Domingue.
You think so? In a game seven?
I guarantee 100%. Sully's gone a little bit soft in the last couple of years. He has early onset Dan Bylsma's disease.
Don't say that.
Well, no, I mean, like I'll give an example. 2 years ago, they're playing Montreal. Patrick Marleau stinks, and they wouldn't scratch him.
And he's out.
And he's out with 2 minutes left trying to, you know, score the tying goal. Okay, look at this year.
I do remember that.
Brian Boyle should not be friggin' dressing. If he was any slower, he'd be going backwards. If he was any slower, he'd be a corpse. But this is a team based on speed. Drew O'Connor's fast. But Sully won't bench Boyle because of veteran respect.
I know. I hate it. Thanks,
Super Genius. And if they get the game, Game 7, he'll say, Domingue got us here. We're going to play him. You watch. Thank you for the call. 412-333-WXDX, the number to call. Hey, hopefully Domingue will just win the next two games. Make it easy. Bruins and Carolina are tied now. Two games apiece. And I want to point out, by the way, and it pains me to say this, Brad Marchand was so good in that game yesterday. 5 points in a 5-2 win. He is a little rat scumbag, but he is one hell of a hockey player, even without the rat stuff. He is just amazing. And then tomorrow night, every single game in all four series, every series is tied 2-2. You got four crucial games tomorrow night, and there'll never be more pressure to playoff game this year than Tampa Bay at Toronto. For Toronto, you might think there's pressure on Tampa. Ain't no pressure on Tampa. They've already won two cups in a row. Toronto ain't won a cup since 1967. I forget the last time they even won a playoff series. And they got a good team, and they're playing the defending champs. And it's at Toronto. And if Toronto loses at Toronto, Tampa Bay's going back home to wrap it up. The pressure in that game is going to be unreal. How about tonight? How about Calgary being down 2-1 to Dallas? Dallas sucks. I don't know how that's happened unless Calgary's maybe not all that good, perhaps not as good as their record. So there's so many stories in the playoffs, not as good as Louis Domingue, of course. Not even close to being as good as Louis Domingue. Up next, after the list, we're going to talk to Woody from the morning show here on the X. I'm Mark Madden live. Live, I said, all the way live at Cambria Hotel, right above PPG Paints Arena on 105.9 The X.